Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello everyone, I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind, add two drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake, dress it with the olives of grace and empathy, sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining me for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world where we ask, oh my God, and what the flock? Is Tucker Carlson really opening for Kid Rock? Did Iran take the bait? And if so, will it serve Israel up on a plate? Now that the NPCs are joining the game, perhaps it won't be that long before the Republic is reclaimed. And the question, my darlings, that plays on the minds of the people, when will we see the revenge of the American bald eagle? Soon, my darlings, very soon. From the light we came, and to the light we will return, because there is only light. And so darkness is a temporary manipulation, which also means we are always in the light, because the light is all there is. So all of this is some sort of holographic illusion while we sort out our asses from our elbows. I'll give you a hint. Generally, the ass is a lot bigger than the elbow. So enjoy the show as we, the people, come to the realization of the importance of proactive citizenship. If you're joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. Darlings, no judgment here, really, not at all. No judgment, just opinions. But if you are woke, this show may damage your fragile mindset. So best to turn it off now and walk away. If you think CRT is anything other than a device to divide and conquer, walk away now because you're wrong. And people don't like being wrong, and I wouldn't want to upset anyone. I upset a great many people, apparently. I get these weird little letters from people, strange little postcards with threatening little ambiguities on them, and strange little emails asking me if I'm a Nazi sympathizer. Aren't people very, very weird? Well, I'm none of those things, actually. Martini heads. We value common sense and common courtesy and common decency because we are common folk. We study and we respect the Constitution of the United States of America. We believe in life, liberty, the ownership of property, they should never have taken that part out, and the pursuit of happiness. I would say our ideology is libertarian, and by the way, we have no romantic illusions about the land of the free and the home of the brave. We are not swayed by our emotions. We process our emotions as one would process and analyze any type of incoming intel. You see, darlings, we martini heads, we don't just drink alcohol and meditate and do strange things. You know, we know how the world works. We know who runs it. We know how it's run. We know why. And we also know that unless we destroy the deep state utterly and completely, living on this planet offers no value to anyone except those who want the experience of living in a fetid swamp of perversion and depravity. So, martini heads, we come from all walks of life. all socioeconomic groups and all belief systems, including genuine atheists. And that makes me so happy. It makes me so very happy to have atheists in my group. Welcome, you beautiful godless darlings. I adore you all. And what, you might say, makes atheists reach out to a spirit-centered, half-mad podcaster? Well, what could we possibly have in common? Interesting. I'll tell you what we have in common. The most important things in life. The tools for playing the game of life. An unshakable sense of sovereignty and a commitment to common sense. You see, darlings, on a physical realm such as ours, spirit manifests as harmony and common sense, the right order of things, people being in their right minds, an easy and elegant, harmonious flow. Spirit equals common sense. On today's show, we have Ani Pontificates, followed by Quack, which is questions, answers, and comments. And that will be followed by a poem, usually very silly, but occasionally serious. Then we have awesome American civics and history. And then we have my favorite part of the show, which is the cocktail of the day. And today's cocktail is a new one for me, and I hope it's yummy. So let me take a sip right now and see if it's a winner or a sinner, because, darlings, Metaphysical Martini is where the Holy Spirit meets top-shelf distilled spirits, and that, IMO, is a lovely combination. You know, darlings, you know, if you're into the Holy Trinity thing, and I have my own views on what that all is, but if you do have an affinity for the notion of the Trinity, a classic martini is the cocktail for you. Three parts, you see, like the Holy Trinity, gin, dry vermouth, and an olive. You put those together, and the heavens will sing out and make a joyful sound unto the Lord. Now, you can use vodka instead of gin, but that's not actually a martini. Did you know that? No, that's called a kangaroo. I kid you not. But asking for a vodka martini is perfectly acceptable today. But I digress. I digress, as I always do when imbibing. Let me try this drink. Don't go away, darlings. Sipping is happening. Hold on. Oh, God, that is awful. It's very rare. It's very rare I come across a combination that is awful. I've drunk cocktails that are a bit too shishy. I'm not a shishy woman. I'm a working woman. You know, I don't do fancy frills and pretense of luxury and crocheted frilly things. But I'll drink, you know, cheap liquor. I've drunk cheap beer. I've drunk cheap shit, really. But this just has a flavor that borders on root beer, and sorry to my fellow Americans, but I think root beer was something invented by Lucifer to torture good people. I will try my very best to sip this cocktail throughout the rest of the afternoon so that I don't make any rash judgments. But God, that's awful. Okay, moving on. What's my pet peeve this week? Who will suffer damnation during my pontification this week? Well, I have a few things. I guess I have a few things I'd like to get off my chesticles. I'll pick just one, or maybe two. So I'll start with the masks, the bloody masks. They're coming back. Oh, my God, people, what's the matter with you? Breathing is an important human function. Without breath, the human body dies. And I'm seeing peeps wearing masks again. Not that many, but enough to make me take notice. And they're wearing the simple cloth masks. Those do not prevent disease. Breathing in your own exhale for hours at a time can only result in harm. If you are doing this to avoid catching something, you know, a common cold or the flu. Remember the flu? We had the flu once. Everybody got flu, and we had flu, and then it was hijacked by the cult COVIDian. Oh, whatever. Anyway, it's a free will universe. And if you want to wear one, a mask, you know, that's your call. But if someone convinced you that it would prevent the spread of disease, you might want to think again and then go back and kick that person in the shins. Instead of trying to prevent tiny particles of whatever from entering your nose and mouth, we might consider doing something to boost our immune systems. I mean, don't you think that might be a good thing? Perhaps we could all lose some weight or drink some more water or, you know, eat healthy or do the one thing. And I apologize for my voice. I have the flu. I do actually have the real flu. So, you know, we can do the one thing that really works to reduce the toxin load of the body, which is deep breathing, regular breath work. And there's a million and one different types of breath work out there. I mean, you can just sit on a chair and breathe in and out using your diaphragm, low in, you know, low, slow inhale, and then a really slow exhale. If you do that for 20 minutes a day, your health will improve 80%. But there's so go to YouTube or BitChute or Rumble or somewhere and go and look at a breathwork video. You know, that's the easiest thing to do. You know, the cashier at my local market was wearing a mask today, and she's a lovely girl. She really is, and she's obese, unfortunately. And because of that obesity and the fact that she was wearing a mask, she was clearly in distress. She was red and she was puffy, and little strange little gooey things were coming out of her eyes. And the aura above her head was concave. So, you know, I asked her if she had a cold and she said no. So I asked her why she wore the mask. And by the way, I asked politely, almost as an aside, because contrary to popular belief, I do have manners. So she said she got bronchitis every year at this time, and she wanted to avoid that this year. So we had a short convo, you know. I asked if she'd always worn a mask at this time of year, and she replied, oh, yes, she did. And did she get bronchitis despite wearing the mask at this time every year? And she replied, yes, she did. So, you know, I asked why she wore it then this year, since clearly it did not prevent bronchitis. And she replied after a short pause, I don't know what else to do. Now, this was the, you know, the local market, and there was a line behind me, so I couldn't finish the convo with her. But I will see her again next week, and I believe she is open to a chat. And what she does is her affair. You know, I'm not some sort of reverse Karen, you know, but somehow I knew that the answer was going to be, I don't know what else to do. And that's not a good enough answer, because it opens up a much larger can of worms, which is that we humans give up our power at every turn. Someone says, do this whatever, and the people, they whatever. You know, one of the biggest mistakes I made in my life was thinking that others knew more than I did or knew better than I did. It took me a while, but I now know this was very far from true. So please do not make the same mistake. Don't blindly follow whatever the authorities suggest or instruct. Engage your rational mind. Ask yourself, when you are asked to do something, does this make sense? Do I have a frame of reference for this? Why would I do this? Who suggested it? Why did they suggest it? Who does it benefit? Who does it hurt? If you do something potentially life-altering without asking those questions, you are a programmed automaton. And there is no gentle way to tell you this, but, you know, you need to know. It is, though, I guess, a lot easier to ask these questions now. You know, now that the assault upon the American dream is so obvious, it's in our faces and up our asses 24/7. And all but the oblivious have realized something has gone very, very wrong. And the Biden, and yes, I know it's not him, the Biden puppet administration is clearly destroying America and plans to hand it over to New World Order. And you know what? Let them try. They are trying. They are trying, honey. They're doing a very good job. But you know what? They're not going to win, because we, the American people, also have plans for them. We plan to hand them over to the executioners at Gitmo. And that's what I call a final solution. Yeah. What else earned my ire this week? The price of groceries. Just, it seems that every single trip we make, the price goes up. What did I buy the other day? Real essentials. Because I've got a massive prep kit. You know, some of it at home, some of it in the local storage units. But what did I buy? I bought milk, orange juice, rye crackers, 6 apples, a cottage cheese, and a pack of gum. Care to take a guess? Milk, orange juice, rye crackers, 6 apples, cottage cheese, and a pack of gum. $32. That makes me very unhappy. What else makes me unhappy is the price of gas. And I don't believe that petrol is a finite resource, by the way. The way I see it, we're always going to have petrol. The price of utilities. I mean, I live in a mid-size apartment, and I pay about $200 each month for my PG&E. That's a ridiculous amount of money. What else? The agenda of local, state, and federal governments to keep adding new taxes up to and including the how much did you poop this week tax and the personal rectum non-muffled emissions charge to subsidize the partial refund on your pay-per-flush tax. I mean, what else? What else? Doctors. Doctors who refuse to apologize to their patients for recommending the clot shot. Doctors who refuse to apologize to their patients for having killed them. Doctors who know that they're part of a mass murder agenda and refuse to speak out. Uniformed personnel who act like jackbooted thugs during this whole scamdemic. Places of business who refuse service without proof of vaccination. You know what, my darlings? I have a very long list of people I don't like today. So let's dispense with the pontification and move on to quack. Questions, answers, and comments. All right. If you would like to share your personal cocktail of wisdom with martini heads across the globe, send your emails to me, Ani@aniabedissian.com, or you can go via snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA. And should your missive be chosen for its moment of glory on the show, please let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as omit personal details. All righty, Pook, let's go ahead and shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, 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 shaky. Oh, and here's the first today, as the Irish say, but they usually say that when they're holding a pint of Guinness. But here's the first today. And this is from Omit Personal Details, who says, "Dear Ani, what are the chances that Earth will hurtle into the sun? And if that happens, do you think it will end?" Oh, no. How do you think it will end? Yes, it will end. It will bloody well end. How do you think it will end? Okay. So you're asking me, what are the chances that Earth will hurtle into the sun? And if that happens, how do I think it will end? Dear Omit, of all the things to worry about, that one is pretty far down the list. How do I think it will end? Very quickly and very crispy. Moving on. What else did we have today? I'm very happy to know that some of my UK people are following me on BitChute and a couple of other platforms out there. So it's lovely. I mean, I'm an American now, but obviously I'm from Britain, and I feel like I have one foot there and one foot here, but very much following the American way. It makes me very happy to get missives from back in the old UK. And this is from Bill Initial H in St. Albans, UK. And Bill asks, or says, or whatever, "Dear Ani Mad Shaman, I know there will be a massive right-wing backlash worldwide. We can start any time now, but this is my question. What will happen to the millions of illegal invaders who are already here? They were brought here under false pretenses. Promises were made behind the backs of the British people. Our patience is at an end, and it's only a matter of time before there is genuine and bloody civil unrest. Who pays for all these people to go back home? And how soon can we make it happen? And by the way, would you like to come back to England and run for Prime Minister? No. Absolutely bloody no. Although, if Nigel Farage gets back into the game, I might consider being on his team. Anyway, moving on. Who pays for it, Bill? I don't know. I can't answer that. Ultimately, it's always us, isn't it? The hardworking taxpayer. I'm sure they'll find a way to put that bill back onto us. Will the illegal invaders go back home? Actually, yes. I do believe they will. And I believe it will be a priority for any common sense government to allocate funds for the humane and immediate deportation of those brought here under false pretenses. It is true. They were promised housing and employment. Same thing here in America. Do we ever learn from history? Do we? No, we don't. But the illegals, because they are illegal, they're feeling the hostility toward them grow daily all over the world. Are we ever going to figure out that cheap labor creates an underclass? I mean, we see this all over the world. That is not a good foundation upon which to build a future for your progeny. And I just want to make it clear, we're not talking about legal immigrants, people coming here through the proper channels, as I did, studying American history, taking the tests, paying a shitload of money for our citizenship. No, we're not talking about those people. We're talking about people who wouldn't get a visa if they went through the proper channels, the dregs of society, the trafficking cartels and their employees, and all those single young men of fighting age hanging out in camps up and down the states. Well, up mainly, I think, closer to Canada. But we have a small army of paid thugs inside our borders that was put here by the Biden administration. But thank God we are a nation of hunters, plinkers, and slugsters. I really wouldn't take on the average American citizen. We're well armed, and for the most part, we're very responsible and very well trained. I will say that Big T, and whoever is going to be your equivalent of Big T, will have, back there in England, Big T will have his hands full when he comes back this year. By election or military coup remains to be seen, but I assure you, Bill, the same will happen in the UK. Once we destroy the globalists, there will be another mass migration, but this time everybody goes back home. Because this is the land of the free, not the land of the freeloaders. You don't come here and chant death to America and wave your own country's flag here. I wouldn't do it in front of me anyway. I have asked peeps on the other side about this. There's a consensus that the most probable outcome by far is repatriation. And it's the outcome that will make the most people happy. The illegals aren't happy either. They're not getting what they promised and everybody hates them. And they're under the control of whoever paid for them to come here. Yes, we know it's the governments themselves under the guise of some NGO or another. But they're between a rock and a hard place right now, the illegals, and some of them are turning, they're turning really nasty. Bill, the next year or two is going to be rough, but hang in and do not compromise your principles. The next two generations will be formative for mankind. I mean, it will take about 40 years to sort all this out. Well, let me put it another way. It'll get sorted in the next 2 years, but it'll get settled over the next 40 years. But I believe 100% that nothing can stop what's coming, because I've talked to Looking Glass, and I also know that Trump's around. He's not going anywhere. Light Trump's dark. Light Trump's dark. Nothing can stop what's coming. That's what we know. So hang in there, bro, back in the UK. It's going to be okay. Who else wrote to us this week? Here's one from Matty. Matty. Matty writes, New World Order is the enemy of humanity. Thank you, Matty. I agree, as do all the martini heads in all the universes, known and unknown. I'm looking in the fishbowl. And I didn't get any pretty postcards this week. I really enjoy it when you, you know, send me those. I like those a lot. Okay, what have I got here? This is from Henry. You don't hear that name much anymore. It is a lovely name. Henry in Central Oregon. And he says, I enjoy your podcast samplings so much. I am sending you a box of the finest whiskey samplings. Enjoy, Henry. Oh, what a treat. I shall look out for those. Thank you very much. Whiskey sampler. Sounds like Whitman sampler. And that combination, that sounds like a good night in. Okay, I'm checking the mailbox every day, Henry, until I get my whiskey. What else shall we pluck from the voids of obscurity? Behold, an email from Del Boy. The UK martini heads will get that one. There was a show back in England called Only Fools and Horses, one of the funniest little situational comedies I've ever seen. Del Boy was the main character in that. Anyway, moving on. Dear Annie, do you think the world will end on April 8th? Well, Del Boy, how shall I answer that? If you're hearing this, then no. No, I don't think the world will end on April 8th, because today is April 10th, and here we are, coexisting in meaningful and almost intimate ways. I can only imagine, though, what weird shit went down with CERN that day. We all had very deeply emotional responses one way or the other on that day. Now, I have my ideas about what happened with CERN, and I have some very reliable intel. That they were denied access to the things that they wanted to access, and they failed to open the dark portals that they wanted to open, and that surprised them, because they've never failed to open those portals. But you see, we, the white hat shamans, are getting much better at our jobs, and we have learnt a lot from these these black hat shamans. They're of reptilian blood. They are very powerful. I've had personal, decisive contact with them. And I thought I was going to die. Really, they're very, very skilled. But what's happening now is that we're learning from them. And then the light, the monastic Christ light, is pouring in. And I can say, I always knew this would happen. I knew. But this is the first time this week that I can actually relax and say, oh my God, the cabal is in full retreat. And it makes me very, very happy. So anyway, sometimes the allness has to intervene. It is a free will universe, but I'm not going out on a limb here. I think it's fairly obvious. We're getting a little bit more help than we deserve. And here we are, all of us, unscathed, all fresh. And bathed. How lovely. Thank you for your email, Del Boy. We shall overcome. And all shall be well. Because again, the looking glass told me. Okay, let me have a sip of this cocktail, which usually just isn't a problem for me. We all know how much I love cocktails. I'm going to have another sip. I'm having a sip. This is just awful. I just can't drink this anymore. This is terrible. I'm so sorry. Towards the end of the show, I'll tell you what it is. It's nothing amazingly special. It's just awful. Let's distract me from this vile flavor. Here's one from Fred, and Fred lives in Tulare, California. I know where that is. And Fred says, Fred says, if you were allowed only one gun, which one would you pick? Oh, God, Fred, I would never incarnate onto a realm where I was allowed only one gun. It's just not doable. I mean, different firearms serve different needs. So you need many of them. Or I do, because I'm a firearms. It's my hobby, you see. It's not just for the Second Amendment and for defense. It's my hobby. I enjoy them. I'm a bit of an enthusiast. I would say, How can you do just one gun? I need one for concealed carry. So that obviously has to be a revolver or a pistol, because I'm just under 5'2" and I can't hide a large frame on my small frame. I live in an apartment. So I need a shotgun for home defense because I have to be very careful about over-penetration. I happen to really like my neighbors, and some of them are retired federal officers, and I probably shouldn't go around killing them by accident. I also think it's sensible to have an AR-15 in case there is a need to deal with multiple assailants. I mean, you know, I can reload my shotgun in double quick time because I practice, but it takes 5 rounds, while an AR-15 can take 30 rounds. And I do like the 5.56 caliber round. It's not as penetrative as I thought it would be. I also like the option of having my 9mm Ruger carbine to hand because it's easy to use and it has minimal recoil. For pure plinking pleasure and for keeping vermin under control, I love my Ruger 10/22 rifle. So I'm not actually sure. I'm not sure I can answer your question because lifestyle surroundings, that's what dictates what you'll need. And there simply isn't a one size that does it all. I mean, I think everyone should know how to handle a handgun, a rifle and a shotgun and go from there. At the very least, for me, I need 2 guns. Maybe I could get it down to 2. So I choose a pistol for my EDC and then I would agonize over shotgun versus AR-15 for the home and for other applications. You know, I have to say, having my guns and especially having a concealed carry license has made me a better person. It really has, because I'm calmer. I have much greater situational awareness, and I'm very conscious of never showing my firearm unless my life or that of my family is under immediate threat of harm. I know what I have, and I know the damage it can cause. That's why I have it. Some of our British martini heads marvel at American gun culture, and I'm all too happy to set them straight. We don't buy guns because we want to go out onto Main Street and start shooting people. The mass shootings are done by those with severe mental health issues. And some of those are actually set up by the establishment, who will do anything to disarm the population. And, you know, given how many mental health issues exist today, the number is remarkably low. Your average American gun owner is well trained and puts in regular range time. Your average American gun owner has a big old safe bolted to the wall. And those with concealed carry licenses take out insurance from organizations such as USCCA, who, for a mere $30 a month, will pay up to $2 million in legal costs should you have to use your gun to save your life or the life of a member of your family. And those organizations offer further training as part of our monthly fee. And let me take this opportunity to say to all my Americans, if you conceal carry and you don't have USCCA insurance or similar, you are being very silly because this administration does not respect the Constitution and does not think that you have the right to defend yourself. So in the UK, the armed establishment, they weren't armed when I left England, but the police are armed now. The armed establishment can knock on your door and they can do as they please with you. Here in America, we shoot back. And we keep shooting until the threat is neutralized. That's just common sense, isn't it? Our guns are tools we use to protect threats upon our sovereignty. Our God-given right to live as we please. So thanks for writing in, Fred from Tulare. No, I can't do just one gun. Forget about it. But thanks for the letter. Now that I think of it, Tulare is near Fresno, and I visit family there quite often. So I'll put it out there to any potential clients in the Fresno area who need property clearing or energy work. Drop me an email, and we can get some dates on the book. My next trip out to Fresno is going to be in mid-May, which is next month. Okay, let's take one, maybe two more questions before moving on to poems and whatever else I think I can come up with. Let's give the fishbowl a good old shuffle. This is from Colton, C-O-L-T-O-N, who asks, Nietzsche says, there are no facts, only interpretations. Well, my shirt is blue. Is that my interpretation or is it a fact? I asked 10 of my friends, what color is my shirt? They all replied blue. Where do I go from here? You were the one who suggested that we study philosophy in the first place. Now I'm even more confused than I was when I began. Oh dear, Colton, darling, your shirt is blue. It's a blue shirt. Everyone agrees your shirt is blue, because that is what someone decided to name that particular hue. Someone's interpretation of that particular hue was the color blue. And that's now accepted as fact. This color is blue. Someone named it, and we all went along with it. Does that help? I do hope so. Don't overcomplicate the whole philosophy thing, darling. It really is about expanding the consciousness. Philosophy is about, let's ponder the imponderable. We may not get a response. We may not even understand the response. But the fact that we're putting it out there to the universe, that we are asking these questions, gives us a lot of bandwidth. And the universe goes, oh, look, they're asking some sensible questions down there for a change. Let's give them some answers. Let's give them a little bit of mojo to be going on with. That's why we do it. And one last missive of the day is from Koharu. Koharu, I think that's probably Japanese. Koharu says, I want to tell the martini heads about a book I bought recently that helped me to sort out my head. It is called The Rewired Life by Erica Spiegelman, and it offers practical advice from an almost non-spiritual point of view. In particular, I would appreciate it if you would share the section on self-empowerment. The questions woke me up and helped me to make changes. And Koharu very kindly sent me a copy of this book, The Rewired Life, by one Erica Spiegelman. Okay, let's read the list of questions that changed your life. And it's all about how we give away our power. So we compare ourselves to other people instead of acknowledging that each person has a unique journey and can be compared only to themselves. I agree. We rush and care about the result and not about the journey. I agree. We let negative judgmental thoughts cloud our understanding of our gifts, talents, and abilities. I agree. We let others define us instead of defining ourselves. Agreed. We lie, act disingenuously, or people please. We compulsively place others' needs above our own. True. And we do the reverse. We give away the power of doing good by focusing only on our own needs and ignoring the needs of others. Yes, that happens too. We ignore thoughts and feelings and opinions by refusing to listen to our inner voice. Oh, yes, do we ever. We don't take good care of our bodies. We don't take good care of our bodies. No, Ani Abadisyan, we don't. We buy into quick fixes instead of getting to the root of the problem. True. We betray our deepest values and settle for an inauthentic experience. Agreed. And that one is a biggie. And every item on that list is a result of what I call FEG, fucked up ego programming. And the book goes on to say we are empowered when we slow down and ground ourselves in the moment. We ask others for support and acknowledge that we can't always do it alone. We honor our feeling and our feelings and listen to them. And I'll add to that, process your feelings. Don't act on them. We speak in a respectful, peaceful, and kind way. We own our gifts and refuse to hide them. By gifts, I think you mean aptitudes and skill sets. We speak well of ourselves and affirm our highest good out loud. Yes, never speak negatively about yourself. We forgive easily and we speak well of others. We are empowered by the support of the healthy people we surround ourselves with. We have purpose and direction in life. We help others and we act creatively, reflecting on our innate divine flair for creativity. Well, you know, I can't disagree with anything there. And this book is chock full of sensible information and exercises that are suitable for people new to letting the spirit inhabit the human. I am grateful to you, Kohari, for taking the time to share this with your fellow martini heads. And I particularly like your phrase. The book offers practical advice from an almost non-spiritual point of view. That made me chuckle. As valuable as these books are, and they are, doesn't it strike you as odd that we have to jump through these hoops to get our minds back on track? And people tell me I'm mistaken, you know, when I point out they are brainwashed, but, you know, this is basic stuff. It's a primer to 101. That list isn't even 101. It's a primer to 101. And millions of grown people are purchasing these books and saying, wow, I have my head up my ass. How did that happen? Let me follow the steps in this book and have a better life. The human race is not only off track, it can't remember where the track is. I applaud anyone wanting to find their right mind and use their right mind. I am not deriding anyone here, but I am pointing out how low we have fallen on the meters of sovereignty and common sense. Thank you to all the martini heads for writing in and sharing their stories. We wouldn't have a show without you, so keep them coming, and we'll keep on reading them and sharing them. And now, my darlings, segue music. That was quite terrible. Now it's time for a little pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I like coming home, making myself a cup of tea or a small drinky-poo, and writing really bad but occasionally brilliant non-peer-reviewed poetry. So I wrote this the other day after a fabulous session with my Ani Avedisian Course in Miracles group, which you can join if you wish. You know, we study Course in Miracles, but we don't confine ourselves to that. It's more of a general ego busters course. We incorporate philosophy, psychology, whatever we think is going to help us to identify and destroy the false ego programming. And I'm, you know, I've been doing this for a couple of years now with these groups, and we're all just getting along swimmingly. So if you're interested, go to my website, aniabadissian.com, go to the AKIM page, and read all about it. And I will just tell you, in the interests of transparency, I am going to change some of the content in the curriculum. We love A Course in Miracles, but it's not for everyone. So while we kept it on the curriculum, it represents about 50% of the content. So if you'll learn about the philosophy of Stoicism and all sorts of interesting things. It's not just going to be the Course in Miracles, which is incredibly long-winded, but it does have value for some. So drop me a line if you're interested in joining my motley crew of wonderful spiritualists, and we'll take it from there. And now, back to poetry. This one isn't particularly silly, but it just came to me the other day while I was sampling a particularly nice Pinot Noir from not too far from where I live. And I've titled it Morals, Marvels, and Magic Tricks. So here we go. Teach me the secrets of the universe, the seeker begged the guru. I want to travel the cosmos like Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhuru. I wish to contact with the source pod, the center of all existence. I want to merge with the mind of God. Please help me to cover that distance. The teacher smiled at the seeker. How many times had she heard this? Before the cosmos comes to Pika, there are steps that cannot be missed. The seeker stood tall, and retorted, I will do all the things that I must. The teacher said, duly recorded. It's the mindset that one must adjust. This world, it's filled with distractions and shortcuts that lead to dead ends. On Earth, demons make transactions, and some of them pose as your friends. As a human, your need for acceptance will fight with the sovereign soul. You will crash and forego repentance, and your ego will swallow you whole. The seeker, still tall, cast his gaze to the wall and pondered a moment or two. I will do what I must to gain your trust, for the veil I wish to slip through. I need not trust you, the teacher guffawed. The journey is yours and not mine. But you want magic tricks, and you want to be awed by things that are not worth a dime. If you wish to cover the distance from human to celestial, You need focus and persistence to overcome the comical and material. The lessons are many, and we'll learn them in time. But for now, let's open this door. Every day, in every way, be better than you were before. Isn't that lovely? I think it's lovely. I wrote it. Folks, there are no magic tricks in metaphysics. Tricks are for children. There exists mountains of knowledge to absorb and, you know, mountains of knowledge. Keep learning. I encourage that. But there is no such thing truly as advanced studies. If you want to stabilize your alignment with allness and make it the primary vibe in your being, focus on the basics each and every day. Engage in deep breathing exercises. Learn how your energy anatomy works and keep it tuned up. Unless you do that first, your journey will be hit or miss, and the road will be filled with frustration. So don't waste your incarnation by suffering with no reason. Take the advice of the ancients. Start slowly. Perfect the basics, which will help you to develop your intuition, which is your God voice. And once that's working, that, you know, that so-called magic, that begins. It's not magic, of course. It's the correct order of things. Different frequencies produce different results. The God frequency has the highest vantage point. It's the modern translation of, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. One day, mankind will stop praying to God and instead merge with God and walk the physical realms as God. And that day will feel like magic. And that's the day I'm going to open my bottle of Chateau Cheval Blanc Saint-Emilion Grand Cru Classé 2012. Very expensive bottle. I really hope it's going to be tasty. All right. That's that then. And now it's time for... I thought I held that last note very well. Awesome American civics and history. So, along with a very strange little letter, which I'm not going to read to you, someone sent me a copy of The Complete Idiot's Guide to American History. Thank you for that. So since many of you believe I am a complete idiot, I have chosen something from this book to share with you all today. And today's star-spangled subject is Home Sweet Home. Now, this is about the Homestead Act. Let me get this book that was so kindly given to me. And this is about the Homestead Act. Let me give you a little preamble to that, but not the actual preamble that Lincoln did. As early as the 1830s, various groups clamored for free distribution of the vast public lands in the West. In 1848, the Free Soil Party was organized to oppose the extension of slavery into the territories newly acquired as a result of the Mexican War. The party failed to carry a single state in the presidential election that year, but its idea of regulating federal distribution of public lands was one means of stopping the spread of slavery into the territories. When the Republican Party was founded in 1854, most of the Free Soilers abandoned that dead-end party and they joined this new one, which adopted the distribution of federal lands as a plank of its 1860 platform. This issue fanned the flames of Southern secession. The slave states were always opposed to any policy that would bring more free states into the Union. But when the Civil War broke out, well, Southern opposition became a moot point. May 20th, 1862, President Lincoln signed into law the Homestead Act, which granted 160 acres of public land in the West as a homestead to any person who is the head of a family or who has arrived at the age of 21 years and is a citizen of the United States, or who shall have filed his declaration of intention to become such. Was it a free gift? Not quite. Although the homesteader had only to pay a modest filing fee, He did have to live on the land for 5 years and make certain improvements, the most important of which was the construction of a dwelling. And after these conditions had been satisfied, the homesteader received clear title to the land. So the Homestead Act was a bold experiment in public policy and was shaped by years of hard experience with the distribution of unsettled land. Traditionally, such territories had drawn unscrupulous speculators who figured out ways to come into control of vast acreage and make quick fortunes. Well, that portion hasn't changed. The new law sought to avoid such abuses and aspired to a high degree of democracy. For the most part, it succeeded, although there were plenty of sharpers eager to burrow through the legal loopholes. The greatest culprits in fraud were the big railroads and the big mining companies seeking to acquire large tracts of land at the public expense. Despite the abuses, however, the Homestead Act opened the West to hundreds of thousands of Americans. The new settlers were different from the first waves of Westerners. You know, the solitary trapper, the mountain man, the bachelor soldier, the grizzled prospector now made way for the farmer and the family. And with the family came stable, permanent communities. Timber was a scarce commodity on those treeless plains, but sod was abundant. The very soil that posed such a formidable obstacle to farming, at least until the manufacturer of John Deere's Grand Detour Ply, was a durable, dense, and quite literally dirt-cheap building material. The work of the sod farmer was back-breaking. Even using the Deere plow, busting the sod into viable crop rows was not an easy task. For the many homesteaders who had the misfortune to stake claims at a distance from creeks and streams, there was the added burden of digging a well. Few sodbusters could afford to hire a drilling rig, so this work, like most of the work on the prairie farm, had to be done by hand. And with nothing more than a pick and a spade, homesteaders dug to depths as much as 300 feet, where they were exposed to the dangers of cave-in as well as asphyxiation from subterranean gases such as methane and carbon monoxide. Not that breaking your back, excuse me, and risking your life even guaranteed you'd find water. If you came up dry by the time you hit bedrock or shale, you had no choice but to start digging somewhere else. I think sometimes, you know, this is me now, not the book, sometimes we forget the rough lives that pioneers all over the world have had. They left whatever they had behind. Some of it was good, some of it was not so good. But they came here not for themselves. They came here to build something for their progeny. I think we need to give our pioneers a little bit more respect. So, you know, it says water in a well goes nowhere until you take it something. And as the prairie earth yielded an abundance of natural building material, so the winds that fiercely scoured the prairie afforded a natural source of energy. So in 1854, a Connecticut tool shop tinkerer named David Halliday invented a windmill with a vane that allowed it to pivot into the wind. So that's wonderful. And then using the wind power, hundreds of gallons of water could be moved each day to irrigate crops and quench the thirst of the livestock. You know, these sodbusters, my God, they had to be really stubborn people because the land that they work was stubborn and fierce. Wow. So by the end of the 19th century, 600,000 farmers had received clear title under the Homestead Act to approximately 80 million acres of formerly public land. Isn't that something? It really is. You know, and what do they call, you know, the Plains Homesteaders is their actual title, but they were called sodbusters, and the houses themselves were often referred to as soddies. Fascinating. So that's something else to look into. The 1862 Homestead Act, which opened up the West to a whole new level of migration. Very, very interesting. You know, people still to this day don't quite understand all the things that went on in the Civil War. And I'm going to be looking into that and talking a little bit more about that, because after the Civil War, everything changed. And we think it was all about slavery, but it wasn't necessarily all about that. A lot of little things in American history, I find when I talk to young people, they don't quite know their history. They don't quite know the ins and outs of why things happened. We need to do a lot more of connecting dots. And getting into the American school system and teaching American civics and history is something that I'm very interested in doing down the line. But we do have to wait until Big T comes back in and sorts everything out and gets rid of all of the invaders, and we put America back on the map as to where it's supposed to be. We take care of our people. We take care of our veterans. We cure this homelessness epidemic that we have, and we fulfill our sacred purpose. That's the day I'm looking forward to. Then we will go back. We've lost a generation or half a generation to all this wokery and effery, but it's only half a generation. We can fix that. And the new kids that are being born, the new babies, oh my gosh, how bright they are. And they are so hot wired to make a difference and overcome this wokeism disease, this Luciferianism that we are suffering. I don't know about you guys and you gals, but I am very happy. I feel very steady. I feel very positive. I know beyond all shadow of doubt that the cabal is screaming. You know, if you work for Lucifer and you let him down, things don't go well for you. So sorry, you pay your money, you made your choice, you should have worshipped our God, because that is the God, the universal God of this universe. Doesn't make it God. So there we are. And I would like to say that I have finished my drink, because that always means the end of the show. But this drink was awful. And I don't think it's an awful drink. I thought it was awful. So I'll say, well, my darlings, I haven't finished my drink, which always means the end of the show. And I haven't finished my drink because it was quite disgusting. A big thank you to mysticalwares.com for making possible the intergalactic distribution of this podcast, and by doing so, making our world a better place. Today's real life cocktail was, wait for it, an American Sodbusters sarsaparilla cocktail. And here's how you make it. One healthy shot of whiskey or bourbon or rye or corn, whatever you have in your Sodbuster home, and a small bottle of sarsaparilla. You take a highball glass, fill it with cracked ice, pour in some sarsaparilla, add the liquor, and then top it up with sarsaparilla, give it a gentle stir, and sip and sod until your thirst is quenched. I have decided the sarsaparilla tastes like root beer, and it is just so disgusting. I cannot finish this. I'm Ani, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Until we meet again, do not conform. Do not comply. Support America. Kiss Biden bot goodbye. And above all, darlings, as you do this, please remember to let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.